Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Aisha Khalid.
You might have heard of troubles with distracted driving, but what if the road itself could warn you of danger?
Research will need to determine how we alert the drivers because drivers just have regional differences. They also have different driving styles, and so the timing of the alerts might be different.
It's been part of some religious practice for centuries, but we'll find out about the mindfulness revolution.
It's really being offered in this very open-handed way of kind of like, if this doesn't work for you, great. There may be many other things that do work for you.
Looking to get in shape? Well, you might think about belly dancing.
We'll meet some kids who could be future animators.
And we'll talk with an author who gives a slightly new definition to the word jihad.
That's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Now.
The U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says that nearly 3,400 people were killed in crashes involving a distracted driver in 2012.
The same U.S. agency, or NHTSA, also says more than 421,000 people were injured.
Distracted driving can be anything from texting or using a cell phone while at the wheel to adjusting your radio or CD player.
But what if the road itself could warn you about dangers ahead?
VOA's Carolyn Prasuti visited Virginia Tech University, where scientists are working on technologies to do just that.
Imagine you are a construction worker placing traffic cones on a highway. You can almost feel the breeze as this car nearly hits you. Now watch from inside the car as the driver gets a warning that a construction worker is ahead. The driver knows because of high-tech devices that talk to the car. It all starts with this backpack worn by the construction worker.
The backpack has a GPS antenna. It's connected to a device that communicates with the car, telling the vehicle how close the construction worker is. Eventually, all this equipment will be incorporated into a construction vest.
Copy that, Jared.
Now, through Google Glass, you are this driver nearing a traffic signal. A device inches away from the steering wheel shows your speed and how many milliseconds you have until the light turns red. If you ignore the information, it tells you you've run a red light. Researchers are studying these projects on a 3.5-kilometer Virginia Smart Road, maintained by the State Transportation Department and managed by Virginia Tech University. Luke Neurotter says the devices can easily work worldwide.
Research will need to determine how we alert the drivers, because drivers just have regional differences. They also have different driving styles, and so the timing of the alerts might be different.
On a clear day in rural Virginia, the technology works perfectly. But what if weather affects visibility? That, too, is tested on the Smart Road. A 1,900-liter water tank feeds into 75 weather-making towers. The towers can create snow, fog, freezing rain, and heavy downpours.
We've got three 700-horsepower pumps that pump water up to the road, and we bring it out, shoot it through a nozzle, and we actually throw that up in the air and let it gravity pull it down as rain.
Researchers are taking their tests on the road to do real traffic studies. By the end of the year, drivers along this busy interstate highway near Washington will hear this as their normal cars transform into smart cars. The Virginia Tech scientists envision a future when this type of technology is mandatory on all vehicles. In Blacksburg, Virginia, Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News.
Aisha, have you ever been a distracted driver?
Yes, but very rarely. And every time I got distracted, David, I felt the impact. And that reminded me.
I hope it's not literal impact.
Seriously, it
really
reminded me how important my life was, not just to myself, but also to my loved ones.
Mm.
The interesting thing is that it was always small things like taking a sip of tea or coffee from my tea mug, or trying to change a CD driving a different car than my own, or even trying to take a closer look at something.
Mm.
How about you?
Well, I have been guilty of drinking coffee while I'm driving. I have been, you know, like changing the CD or the radio station. I did have an incident where I was in an intersection and there was a guy who looked like he was going to cut in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is during rush hour traffic. And I turned to look at him and I didn't notice that the car in front of me had stopped.
Okay.
And then the next thing I know, I'm eating.
Could you explain? Otherwise, I was going to ask you, why did you look at that car?
Yeah, well, because he was like,
he was trying to cut in front of you.
It was like he was sticking his nose into my lane, like he was going to try to cut in front of me. Mm-hmm. And I turned to look at him, and then wham, and I'm eating airbag.
Okay.
Airbag is not a really good snack. Mm-hmm. But, well, what about you? Do you think that this advanced technology will help?
Let us know by posting on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Well, maybe some more mental focus could help with your driving or with mine.
It used to be done mainly at spiritual retreats and in yoga centers. But now mindfulness meditation is practiced in offices, schools, prisons, and even in the U.S. military.
As VOA's religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski tells us, mindfulness has started a revolution in America.
A visit to the dentist's office can cause nervousness and anxiety. But being a dentist is no picnic either, says Dr. Alona Bauer.
So there's definitely stress. You know, you work in a small environment. It's very exact. It's very precise. Plus, you're managing the patient as a comfort. So there's great stress right there.
So Bauer practices mindfulness meditation at a yoga center in downtown Washington.
You might begin by taking some deeper breaths.
Hugh Byrne has been teaching mindfulness since 2000. He says it's about focusing on the present.
So as you sit here or lie here, see if you can open to whatever you're experiencing right now.
Americans work more and have less time off than people in most other countries. And even outside the workplace, technology and multitasking make it increasingly impossible to disconnect. But shutting off like this is becoming so popular that Time magazine recently declared a mindful revolution. Critics say mindful meditation is a fad that strips an ancient Buddhist tradition of its moral content. Byrne prefers to see mindfulness as
a broad doorway for people to come in. You know, people who might say, well, I'm not really interested in Buddhism or Eastern spirituality, but I do want less stress. I do want less anxiety.
Surveys show that young Americans increasingly consider themselves spiritual but not religious. Byrne says mindfulness is for them.
Nobody's proselytizing. Nobody's saying, you've got to do this, you've got to believe this. It's really being offered in this very open-handed way of kind of like, if this doesn't work for you, great, there may be many other things that do work for you.
After half an hour, it's over. Bauer says it helped her sort the muddle in her head.
It was just chatter, you know, chatter, energy, very jittery energy inside my body, tension. And now I feel like almost I'm speaking slower. My body's more relaxed. My heartbeat is slower.
Bauer grew up without a religious upbringing in the former Soviet Union. Now she says she might just give Buddhism a try. Jerome Sokolowski, VOA News, Washington.
David, are you spiritual or religious?
I have a monkey mind.
What is that?
You know, well, my brother gave me that moniker because you know how like a little rhesus monkey is like,
he's all over the place.
Yeah, he's all over the place. He's never the same place twice.
You never grew up.
I find it.
You
very...
never grew up.
Well, no,
you have the same kind of mind as my 5 years old has.
Okay, thanks a lot. All right. But no, it's the kind of thing where I'm a creative person, but because I'm a creative person, I'm always thinking of different ways to do things.
Oh, okay.
And discipline, you know, sitting there. Like, my brother is a very, very good pianist. Mm-hmm. I never could be as disciplined as he was because he could sit there for hours and play scales and do exercises. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just want to play. Come on. Yeah.
Very creative.
But, yeah, it was
all the signs of a creative mind.
Well, I could come up with stuff, but the execution of them that requires, you know, the
patience.
Engineering type of people, I could design the building as far as, oh, well, we'll have a building that does this and it'll have this in it and we could add that. But as far as sitting down with pencil and paper and going, okay, that has to weigh 4 tons and it, No.
What about you? Do you practice some form of meditation or pray?
Do you think being more mindful could help you reduce stress?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And if you want to see video of Jerome's story, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
Don't act like it's a bad thing to fall in love.
You know, here in the United States and in some other countries, belly dancing is often perceived as a seductive dance performed mostly at specialty restaurants.
But one California dance company is trying to get more people to appreciate it as a form of art.
As Elizabeth Lee found out, the group Belly Dance Evolution is hoping to redefine people's views by fusing Western dance styles with belly dancing.
For many people, this form of Middle Eastern dance is sexually provocative.
It's one and a half. That's it. Yeah.
Delina Carlano was trying to get more audiences to appreciate it in a different way.
You know, at times I felt very discouraged by that discrimination, that we weren't respected artists, and I had to really fight hard to prove myself and to prove my dance company. It's a beautiful, rich art form that has thousands of years of tradition.
Carlano's dance company, Belly Dance Evolution, incorporates Western dance styles with Middle Eastern belly dance in its theatrical performances to make the ancient art form more relevant to audiences today.
We have a break dancer in the show who does hip hop. We've had Georgian dancing mixed with the folkloric dancing, American tribal fusion.
An eclectic group of dancers from around the world perform in these theatrical performances, including Olga Kramarova from Ukraine.
The dancer is imitating the instrument with her body. So it's not meant to seduce, which is, you know, contrary to common belief. It's a total free form of self-expression with, like, percussive, quick movements, you know, but as well as the fluid, soft movements.
Lauren Bolz grew up learning ballet and jazz, but she found something in belly dancing that she didn't find in other dance forms.
Growing up, I'd always assumed that power was more of a masculine energy, and belly dance really showed me that it was a feminine energy as well.
Bolt is starring in the newest show, Alice in Wonderland. She has also performed around the world with a dance company. The main dancers lead training sessions while abroad, from the Americas to Europe and Asia.
It's really amazing how belly dance has sprung up all over the world. In China and Taiwan and Japan, it's relatively new, and women are really, really excited about it.
Belly Dance Evolution also includes local dancers in performances when the company tours. Jelena Carlano says she wants to give her audiences a different image of the Middle East.
What we see in the news a lot is a lot of repression and war and violence and things like that. And part of my goal is to share a little bit of this, the beauty and the richness and these elements of part of that Middle Eastern culture.
Through music and dance. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
To see video of this report, please visit our website, www.voanews.com.
And if you have any comments, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
You can also email us by addressing it to voaasia@voanews.com.
Tomorrow, way too far away. And we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now. We got right now. So get up right now. Cause all we got is right now.
Aisha, you have a young son. Does he like cartoons?
Some. He watches a lot of animated stuff, but I will not call all of them cartoons, though.
Yeah, well, he doesn't watch, like, The Simpsons or South Park.
Yeah,
right?
For me, cartoons are stuff like Bugs Bunny,
yes.
Tom and Jerry.
Yes.
You know, at the stake of revealing my age.
Yeah.
Well, now, Kung Fu Panda or My Little Pony are more of animated movies to me than cartoons.
Yeah, well, you know, more and more animation, which used to be in the days of Bugs Bunny and, you know, Tom and Jerry, was drawn by hand, but now it's done on a computer.
Faisal Al-Masri visited a workshop at a public library in the Washington area where kids were learning how to do that. Faith Lepidus narrates the story.
This is a smiley face or a ball, and it's bouncing across the screen.
It's definitely not an Oscar-worthy cartoon, but Evan is pleased with his first attempt at animation.
I've done a whole bunch of computer classes, but never done this before. I never put that much thought into how it's made. It's interesting, but it's hard.
The kids in the workshop might be surprised at how hard animation is.
Animation is art that moves.
But instructor Steve Storrs says they're open to learning how to create it.
The goal of this workshop is to get the students to understand the basics of animation. So some of the principles like squash and stretch and timing and anticipation, reaction, basic character shapes.
Each time you draw a new face, you'd have to go over to the next frame.
Storrs shows them how to use the same software and techniques used by the big animation studios. Today, they're drawing a ball and making it move.
I think everyone really got a hang of the ball animation really quick and came up with some really good ideas.
It's just like a ball that expands and starts to spiral. I just wanted to play with the program and just see what I could do.
The workshop was organized by a local library. Its spokesman, Steve Barker, says teaching kids animation basics encourages them to use computers in a constructive way.
I think too many kids spend time on the computer playing games and chasing games and shooting games, but animation allows them to create their own self-expression.
Steve Storrs, who's posted his short animated film on YouTube, says he hopes by the end of the workshop, students will be able to create their own characters and make them move.
If they can do that, then they can have a much better sense of how people move and how the program works and just how animation works in general. Because a walk cycle requires pretty much every one of the basic animation principles to pull off correctly and to make it look believable.
This workshop could be the first step toward creating tomorrow's animators. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
To see video of this story, please log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And do post your comments or your questions to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And remember, you can always follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show.
So do what you want with my body. Do what you want, don't stop, let's party.
Do what you want with my body. Do what you want with my body.
Write what you want, say what you want about me. If you're wondering off that I'm not sorry.
Do what you want with my body.
World, help me now.
Aisha, you're from Pakistan, and I believe you're Muslim.
Yeah.
So you would be familiar with the term jihad.
But David, yes. But even if I was not from Pakistan, but from the farthest corner of the world, I would know the meaning.
Yeah.
Good or bad reason is that this term has become so universally known over the past decade, and especially after 9/11, that it is hard to miss this term.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's kind of been, some people have said it's been hijacked by people who want to use it as an excuse for violence. But
you're right.
According,
you're right.
As I understand it, according to the Quran, it means basically struggle.
Yes. Yes,
and
simple as that. Any form of struggle.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to introduce our audience to a woman who discovered her own definition of jihad. Krista Bremer is an author, a mother, and wife. She met and married a Libyan man 15 years ago, and she tells their story in a new book, My Accidental Jihad, A Love Story. I caught up with Krista by the telephone. Krista, this book speaks of your relationship with your husband, Ismail, who is from Libya. You both are living in the United States now. You have two children. But your book reveals a vulnerability in you. Explain the title to my listeners a little bit, because jihad has such a negative connotation, but this doesn't come across as some kind of, you know, military conflict or something. This is very much a love story.
That's right. I know that for many Americans, that word comes along with images and recollections of horrific acts of violence. And I also know that in Arabic, the word jihad simply means struggle. And through my Muslim husband, I've learned that the Prophet Muhammad taught that the greatest struggle or jihad in our lives is the one that takes place in our hearts. It's the struggle to overcome our egos and to get beyond our selfishness and our intolerance and our judgments, and just to try to pry our hearts open a little wider every single day for the sake of our families and our communities and really for humanity in general. And I could not think of a better word to describe how I experience marriage, because it seems to me that marriage is the place where I confront these darker aspects of myself on a daily basis. And it's where I try day after day to just overcome my ego a little bit more for the sake of the relationship.
It's interesting. You speak of, the struggle to overcome your ego. You started out at the beginning of this book very much as a, I guess you could call it, a self-made woman. You were working for Planned Parenthood. You were a surfer in California. And you met Ismael while you were jogging, I believe, in North Carolina?
Yeah, that's right. I grew up in Southern California in the 70s, and I was greatly influenced by feminism, which I discovered in college. And I was an avid surfer and an aspiring journalist, and I had a certain idea of the trajectory that my life would take. And then I met this older Muslim man who was from Libya, and he was raised in a fishing village by two illiterate parents as one of eight children in very poor circumstances. So I wrote this book as a story about a bicultural relationship. And it seems to me that every single relationship is bicultural, because whether we marry someone from the other side of the world, as I've done, or we marry someone from our very own hometown, we arrive into marriage with very different notions of home and family and love and what those should look like. And we have to negotiate those differences. And we also eventually arrive at a place where the mate that we've chosen seems impossibly foreign. And I'm most interested in those moments and how we handle them and how we navigate them. So for me, this book is about what intimacy entails and what enduring love looks like and what it requires, as well as what it offers us in return.
I was struck by the tenderness between the two of you in this book, even in the midst of, you know, times when you're angry with one another. Your story is a love story, as the subtitle says, but it's not Snow White and Happily Ever After. But the question I have, that would you trade it for your vision of what you thought your life was going to be, or would you not trade it at all?
Oh, I mean, I think that the way that our lives unfold, it would be difficult for me to trade any aspect of my life. Because each turn has been inextricably linked to some other gift that I have received. So I absolutely would not trade it for anything.
That is author Krista Bremer. She is the author of My Accidental Jihad, A Love Story. We will have a link to her website on our website, www.voanews.com. Thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Now.
If you want to see video of the stories on our show, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And if you'd like to hear our show again, visit www.voanews.com/now, or you can find us on iTunes.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until Monday, I'm Aisha Khalid.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again for another edition of Now.